105 Drive with Julian Clover.
5:31, beer, cider and music. What's not to like? It's called the Alex Fest and gets underway tonight, running for the next four nights. And Ed Barker is the landlord of the Alex. I'm pleased to say he's coming to see us this afternoon. Not too far to come, Ed?
No, not really. Just across the road.
Yeah, that's pretty good. How long have you been a landlord of the Alex now?
So you may remember I came on your show earlier this year in May to say that we'd taken over over at the Alex. And, yeah, things have been going really well. We've had a great summer, and we're just putting this on as a bit of a last-ditch attempt to hold on to some of that summer frivolity.
That sounds good to me, because the Alex has changed. I've been living around in this area for, I guess, about 8 or so years now, and it's been through a number of landlords in that time. And, I don't know, it just kind of feels like it's right this time around.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, the team and I have worked really hard into creating something that I'm personally very proud of. I think the place looks great. I think the offer that we do suits the local community. It provides something different to what the other great pubs in the area provide, and I think because of that, it's worked out well.
So the Alex Fest, how did the idea for that come about?
Well, I was pretty busy this summer, as you could probably imagine, having opened a new site, so I missed out on festival season. So I just thought we should have our own little festival. I realise it's ambitious, trying to squeeze 20 bands into a venue of that size over a couple of days, as well as putting on a beer festival and street food and one thing and another. But if it entertains the people and it gets some new faces to come and see what we've done over at the Alex, then that's great. And at the end of the day, it's all about just having a bit of fun.
It's quite a lineup, really. The amazing thing normally when you get a festival of sorts, which is within a pub or bar environment, you're getting like two or three acts. But 10 on the Friday night, I'm presuming another 10 on the Saturday night or thereabouts.
That's right. Yeah. So we've got two stages in the venue. The main stage is outside. And we've got an acoustic stage inside. And yeah, you're right, to get 20 acts to come and play, and especially some of the great acts that we've got on the lineup has been fantastic. And really, I've got to thank Tim from 105, who's really helped organise all that.
Well, the wonderful Gold Star tomorrow night, the Son Team's Helium are very good. Elliot Porter, always fantastic. Tom Corney as well. Then Saturday, I notice Amstrax, Fred's House,
yeah.
Never worth, really good, always worth seeing. Music and Spies, John Chrisom, I always pronounced that wrong, and Cody Pennington as well. You've got lots of local talent in there.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I hope, certainly what we've seen over social media, as well as the buzz that's going around our Twitter and Facebook sites, certainly all the local bands seem really keen to come and make a night of it.
I'm just wondering about the two stages, because is there a danger of sort of overlap between from the noise from the outside stage and the acoustic acts playing on the indoors?
Well, the acts don't run simultaneously.
Okay.
There's
somebody out there with a stopwatch to make sure everything...
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Each act gets half an hour slot, and then, for example, while the main stage is playing, it gives the acoustic stage half an hour to get ready for their set, and vice versa. Well, and that way, if everybody wants to watch every act, there's no reason why they can't. They don't have to try and be in two places
at
the same time.
Shuffle between the two areas and buy a beer on the way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. What have you got? Some additional beers which you're putting on for the festival?
That's right. So, we are passionate about beer over at the Alex. For those of you who've been in, you'll notice we've added quite a considerable amount of beer to the already large range that was there. So, as well as 8 cask ales that we always have on, we've added another 3 keg product lines with some fantastic craft beers on there, as well as what we do in the fridges. But to complement that great selection of beer that we always have on at the Alex, we've also got another bar outside, which has got another 6 real ales, as well as some of our newest craft beer products.
And how do you go about selecting the beers? Do you kind of do it Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood style, taking a little piece of each one until you decide which one is right to put on, or recommendations?
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. We I mean, we've got a great team over at the Alex who are very passionate about beer, and I have my favourite brewers, you know, and the other guys...
Are you allowed to tell me who they are? That sort of spoil negotiations with others?
No, I mean, you know, we have got very strong support from Oakham Ales, you know. We support the Calverley Brewer, which is just literally down the road on Hooper Street. You know, and they're some great guys who are really producing fantastic beer. But I have to admit it, you know, it's a very, very rigorous tasting process that we have to go through to ensure we get the beers right.
Is it Oakham who are doing that range of Douglas Adams-themed beers at the moment?
I'm not sure. It's not something that we have on.
Okay.
But we take the core range from
right.
Oakham. It might be something that they do.
Yeah, I just wonder. They sort of working through various titles and references to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the like. The other thing of side of things, of course, is the street food. You've got Inder's Kitchen in and Braising Saddles as well, the latter of which are fairly new. I think Inder's, though, are fairly well established.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the street food scene in Cambridge has really taken off in the last year or so.
What's happening? You've got the food park down at the station a couple of times a week now as well, haven't you? And you only have to go out to some event and you'll see Inder's Kitchen, perhaps, or... somebody from one of the other things, Steak and Honour, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And those guys are really leading the way in producing great food that's affordable and goes out to the masses. And the idea behind it for us was, you know, if guys are coming down, there's obviously a lot of people there. And there's spending a long time in a pub. You know, if you're there, you know, for most of the evening or the best part of the day. I mean, we obviously provide our own...
I was going to ask, your regular food, is that going to be on as well, the burgers?
Yeah, for sure. That's why Steak and Honour weren't invited.
That's right, they've got another gig up the road, haven't they?
yeah. So we'll be doing our version of street food. So that's our... I mean, we operate, as many people know, we operate a Better Burger concept out of the Alex, and that'll be available for everybody, should they choose. But if they want something a little bit different, because, you know, as nice as our burgers are, man cannot live on burger alone. So there are food options there for everyone to try.
Okay, and how does it work in terms of admission? It's free to get in, is it?
It's free to get in, yeah. The only thing is that we're trying to support a local charity. It's the Lennox, which is a fabulous cause. It's a children's cancer trust. So in order of that, we've had some Alex Fest wristbands made up, and they're going on sale, and that money will be donated as our contribution towards supporting the Lennox. So
okay.
If anybody wants to buy a wristband, they can do, and the money will go to a great cause.
And the timings for this starts at 5 o'clock. Is that when the music starts, is it?
Yeah, the music starts at 5. Street food kitchens are burning in the evening. Beer festival is running from as soon as we open the doors, so that's 12 o'clock, Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, well, I'll certainly be over there. I suspect I'll be over there more than once, actually, but certainly we'll be here there for Drive tomorrow from 4 o'clock, all being well.
Yeah, we'll see you there.
Ed, thanks very much for coming in and telling us about the Alex Fest.
No problem.
The top 5 records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
3 minutes past 6 o'clock. Thanks to Emma for the news. We'll now get our entertainment hour underway. In a few minutes' time, Hattie Simpson will be here. We're doing film and theatre. Ahead of that, our regular look at the unsigned chart. And starting off, as ever, with the new entry for the week, the band are Fortunato and the song Strangers.
This is the chart you've been voting for. The Unsigned Chart on 105 Drive.
What you're capable of, let me feel. neighbours and we'll tear away at the layers and I will stay the same. Cause these lives have flavours, all these strangers.
So a return to the unsigned chart for Fortunato. The new entry this week is called Strangers. And if you want to vote for that or any of the other songs in the chart, you can do so. You just need to go to cambridge105.fm/unsigned chart. Now is the time to find out exactly where those songs are.
The top five records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
So number five then, John Chrisom, Made For This. Four is Plum Jam, One-Eyed Jack. Three, Screen People, All Seeing Eyes. Two, Fast Infamy and Flawed. It means number one is Pia Dean featuring Nikki Dean Hart. And the most votes we've ever received for the number one, her song, Clarity.
The Unsigned Chart on Cambridge 105.
I'm saying my spirit wants to break through and take some time alone with me to find a little clarity and figure out where I wanna be. Is there enough space for you and me? Remember time when you were wild and free. I'll come back with some clarity, clarity. Yeah, I'll come back with some clarity, clarity. I'll come back with some clarity. I'll come back, 'cause clarity.
So record-breaking week on the Unsigned chart with the most votes cast in a week and also the most votes for a single track in a week. Both of those records have been smashed. And the lady responsible for doing the smashing was the number one we heard there from Pia Dean, also featuring Nikki Dean Hart. It's called Clarity. Unsigned chart, week 127. You can go and vote for them on the website, cambridge105.fm/unsigned chart. Christina Perry at Cambridge 105 and Human. Hattie, can you use the green one, please? Not the red. Using the red one with you is a bit dangerous. There's no limiter on it.
I love that. There's a dangerous mic for
there's
me.
There's a dangerous mic for Hattie. Yeah, most of them, actually. How are we?
Well, I'm a little bit husky.
We can swap illness stories. I think I've got something developing as well. It's not good.
I don't want to make it any worse with whatever it is that I've got.
I can sign you to the microphone in Studio B, in which case.
I was tempted when you offered earlier.
So what have you got coming up?
We're going to be looking at Gone Girl and a preview of Maze Runner, as well as the PG Woodhouse review as well. And then in theatre, we're off to the ADC for the Footlights International Tour, the Arts Theatre for Jeeves and Worcester, and the Tim Spooner's Assembly of Animals at Cambridge Junction.
So, moving on, Entertainment Hour, more film and theatre now. Hattie Simpson is here, but where is Skye?
Skye is being a busy little worker bee tonight. So, you might not hear from him too many times over the next few weeks, but I shall be here to guide you through cinema and theatre around Cambridge.
That's what we need to know. So, where are we starting?
We're going to start with Gone Girl, which opened last week. We gave a bit of a preview of it. Behold, a review. Ben Affleck is suspected of murdering his wife in this dark and complex thriller from Seven director David Fincher.
Mr. Dunn.
Mr. Collins. I know you. I saw you at the volunteer center.
I wanted to help.
Well, I hope you don't mind me coming by. I got your address from this letter that you wrote my wife.
Amy and I believe in the lost art of letter writing.
I always wondered why you kept in touch after everything. You were together for 2 years in boarding school, right?
She was my first serious girlfriend.
Well, why did you break up?
That's a strange question.
Did you treat her bad? Did you cheat on her?
That's a rude question.
Let me tell you what Amy told me. She dumped you. You completely unraveled. You stalked her, you threatened her, and you attempted suicide in her bed and were institutionalized.
Your wife is missing, and you came all this way to tell me this?
Well, I thought there might be another side to this story. Mr. Collins.
So, yes. When Amy Dunn disappears on her fifth wedding anniversary, her adoring husband Nick is naturally distraught. Adopting a high public profile, he launches a massive search for his amazing Amy. But under intense media and police scrutiny, cracks begin to appear in Nick's portrayal of his perfect marriage. As his lies unravel, he finds himself cast as the prime suspect. Adapted from her own bestseller by Gillian Flynn, this is a gripping, twisty, turny psychological thriller for an age in which such cases are played out in the unforgiving glare of the media spotlight. Neil Patrick Harris leads the supporting cast as Amy's creepy ex-boyfriend, and creepy he is. Making his eagerly anticipated return to movies from TV's acclaimed House of Cards is David Fincher, one of my favourite directors, and yes, Oscar nominated for Social Network, Fight Club and Seven. And you know what? It was really good. There's been mixed reviews around, especially from, you know, people who've read the book and love the book, and then those who are just seeing the film. But it is, whether you view it as a standalone film or as an adaptation of a book, it succeeds extremely well.
And as you said, the writer of the book has adapted it, which doesn't happen that often, actually.
It doesn't.
Does it? It doesn't.
It's very rare to see an author have that much say in their own adaptation. I mean, the only other one recently really was Perks of Being a Wallflower, in which the author also directed the film. It's unusual, and I think it does help. And again, the same thing with Perks of Being a Wallflower. Any changes that are made, any differences from book to film, are kind of acceptable.
And I guess a lot of the time it's done just for film purposes, really, rather than any sort of person thinking, oh, I can write it a lot better than the person who actually wrote the book.
Absolutely. You see it a lot in sort of adaptation fandoms, if you like. There's always outrage at how the film's been put together. Don't even get me started on the Harry Potter fandom. But it's a brilliant film. The book itself is incredibly complex. There are so many different layers to what's going on, and it's told from two different viewpoints. It's told from Nick's viewpoint and Amy's viewpoint as well. And I think it's handled fantastically in the film. There's a bit of argument about the fact that in the film people are saying that Amy's the only narrator and that Nick is not, whereas you get both in the book. But realistically, I feel like, I mean, to be fair, the film is split almost into three parts. And the first part is Nick's part, the second part is Amy's part, and the third part is the final act, which I don't want to spoil at all, because it absolutely throws you for a loop every time it transitions between the parts. It is fantastically put together. The performances are stellar. Ben Affleck already, you know, he completely excels at these kinds of roles. You know, we saw it with Argo and... Well, most of his performances, pretty much. And he suits the character really well. Rosamund Pike as well. There's been a bit of sort of ups and down reviews for her performance, but I just found her completely enthralling. She's totally watchable and, again, suits the character. Margot as well, Nick's twin sister. So everything about this film was brilliant. So I'll try not to point out everything. But Carrie Coon as Margot was superb. She's a fantastic sounding board for Affleck's character. And her character was beefed up a lot from book to film. But it totally works. A fantastic casting choice. And you're almost... Because she's always giving her opinion to Nick. She doesn't like Amy. But then Amy goes missing. And she's like, you know, I don't like her, but that doesn't mean I don't care about her. So it's fantastic.
I like the perspective from different angles thing.
Yes.
One of my favourite TV shows, which lasted, I think, about a season and a half before it was cancelled, called Boomtown, which ran in the US. Did you ever get to see this?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, Donnie Wahlberg, who's now in Blue Bloods alongside Tom Selleck, Magnum, only 20 years older. It told a story sometimes from five different angles of the characters, and it only came together at the end of the episode. It sort of softened that a little bit in the second series, I guess, because the audiences were a little bit unsettled with and why it was ultimately cancelled. But that sort of thing, brilliant.
Yeah, and it's done so well. I mean, to be fair, at times it can be so subtle, it just feels like a lack of chemistry and a lack of direction. But once you get to the end and you look back over those parts, it totally makes sense. Every part that's put in, it ties into the entire entire thing. It's missing a bit of a bite from the bite from the novel, the really sort of dangerous side of it. But it's a brilliant adaptation. David Fincher is a phenomenal director as he is, and it does show in this. He has beautiful cinematography and design. It feels completely slick and sophisticated, but again, totally throws you so many times. You're kept on your toes. It's very clever. It does feel dangerous. I mean, Nick's opening line is, I picture cracking her lovely skull, unspooling her brains, trying to get answers. And that bookends the film. You see it at the start, you see it at the end. And I don't think that spoils anything. there's a very notable section from the book, which is part of what makes the book what it is. It's referred to as the cool girl section. And it's a monologue from Amy talking. Mostly sort of female representation and the sort of ideal woman for the contemporary man and women sort of performing that as a role rather than, you know, embodying it. And that's a big part of the sort of transitions between the scenes. And it does carry from the first part into the second part. And my goodness, it's marvellous. It might not meet the expectations of book fans, but it is a brilliant film. I thoroughly recommend seeing it. I perhaps wouldn't recommend it for the first date material or going to see it with somebody that you don't trust very much. But brilliantly put together. And if you do want to catch it, which you really should, you can see it tonight at the Arts Picture House at 8:30, tonight at Cineworld at 7:30 and 8:30, and at View at 7 and 8:30. Tomorrow you can catch it at the Arts Picture House at 1:35, 5:20 and 8:30. At Cineworld at 1:15, 5 o'clock, 7:30, 8:30, 10:40 and at View at 12:20, 1:20, 2:20, 4:40, 5:40, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock and 10:30. And I couldn't fit the rest of the times for the rest of the weekend onto my piz paper. So
check local listings
for details. Many.
Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. We're doing film and theatre right now. Miss Simpson is in for that. And we're looking at Maze Runner.
We are indeed. A young man must solve the riddle of a giant deadly maze in this heart-pounding post-apocalyptic thriller.
My name is Albie. Now, can you tell me anything about yourself, who you are?
What is this place?
Let me show you. Hope you're not afraid of heights. Let's go. Come on. This is all we got.
What's out there?
We only have three rules. First, do your part. Second, never harm another glader. Most importantly, never go beyond those walls.
It's not like that in Milton, is it?
No. Thomas awakes in a fast-moving lift with no memory of his past life. Emerging into blinding sunlight, he's greeted by Gally, who welcomes him to a place called the Glade. Dozens of young men are trapped here. Each morning, the doors to a giant mechanical maze are opened, and these runners race against time to find a way out. But no one has ever survived a night in the maze, which is teeming with dangerous monsters known as Grievers. Drawing on his dreams of an organisation called WCKD, Thomas is determined to find out who built it and why. But the arrival of the first girl, Teresa, changes everything. This action-packed sci-fi mystery is adapted from the first novel in a best-selling young adult trilogy by James Dashner.
You tell me that the female brain is able to work it out.
Well, you know, I don't want to spoil anything,
no,
Julian.
Okay, sorry.
So I've read the book. You know, it's another young adult adaptation. But I will say this. It's a young adult book and, you know, essentially film that is not what you would expect. It's more in a Hunger Games kind of style than Twilight, Divergent, Fault in Our Stars. It's a lot grittier. In places, it's deeper, in a way, and more sort of sci-fi thriller. Oh, the book series is weird. It's very, very weird. They've already signed on for the second film. This did fantastically in America, but the second book is just so bizarre. I do not know how they'll put it on screen. It's a fantastic young cast, mostly British talent. Will Poulter, who we've seen in all sorts of things, Meet the Millers, Son of Rambo, which is one of my favourites, Kaya Scodelario from Skins and Wuthering Heights, and Thomas Brody Sangster as well, who you'll recognise his face. He was in Nanny McPhee, brilliant actor. So yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see how this fares on the big screen, particularly for a British audience as well. It is bizarre, but just go with it.
Okay.
Is what I'd say. If you want to catch it, it's released tomorrow. Sorry.
Oh, next.
It's released tomorrow. You can catch it at Cineworld at 11:10, 12:30, 2 o'clock, 3:15, 4:45, 6 o'clock, 8:45 and 11:30. And at View at 12, 2:45, 5:30, 8:15 and 11 o'clock. And many, many more showings over the weekend as well. They're expecting it to be big.
Ooh. The Entertainment Hour from Cambridge 105, 105 Drive. And Hattie is here and we're going to be looking at theatre now. Where are we starting, Miss Simpson?
Well, if you fancy a bit of P.G. Wodehouse this week, Nicola Upson's got just the ticket.
Well, the first thing you need to know about Jeeves and Wooster in Perfect Nonsense on at the Arts Theatre this week is that the clue's in the title, because it is absolutely ludicrous from start to finish. And I say that in the nicest possible way. I mean it in a good way. It is the story, basically, of a man and a silver cow creamer, of a country house weekend at Totley Towers, where Jeeves and Wooster have to go to do a bit of matchmaking, to save a doomed engagement, to steal the aforementioned silver cow creamer from Sir Watkin Bassett, who owns Totley Towers. Bertie's aunt Dahlia is also a keen collector of silver, therefore she's put him up to it. But there's also another peculiar character there called Roderick Spode, who looks like Hitler when he first comes on and grows and grows and grows like Topsy as the performance goes on. And he is set to stop Wooster from... But I don't know why I'm telling you the story of all this, because actually the plot doesn't matter. What we love about the Jeeves and Wooster novels, and there are 11 of them, and this is based on the third, called The Code of the Woosters, is the relationship between the rather hapless but good-natured Bertie Wooster and his gentleman servant Jeeves, who gets him out of all sorts of scrapes. And that's done beautifully in the production, played by James Lance and by John Gordon Sinclair as Jeeves. And James Lance in particular, I think, is a wonderful Bertie Wooster. You love him from the moment that the curtain goes up, and you're with him and on his side throughout, which is exactly what you want in an adaptation of P.G. Wodehouse. But I think the real skill in this is the ingenuity with which it's been staged, because when you start, it's really just Bertie Wooster in a chair and a bare stage. And then in the ensuing couple of hours, which goes very quickly, you see all the Totley Towers scenery brought on. We go through antique shops. We have a sheer brilliance of a car scene where Jeeves and Wooster are on their way, and they bring on the car piece by piece. You get the front of the car, you get the windscreen, obviously you have the seats, you have the steering wheel and the horn. It's all brought on piecemeal, but you absolutely believe they're in that car. And then along the way you have a storm, you have rain, the windscreen wipers have their own section and they're brilliant, and you have a level crossing section. There is a third actor in the play, Robert Goodale, who's also one of the Goodale brothers who's adapted this. And he is brilliant playing various roles throughout that. In fact, all the cast play different roles apart from Bertie Wooster himself. And it is just, you believe that you have got a larger cast on stage. You believe you've got a larger set. And I can see easily why it won the Olivier Award of 2013. It reminds me of things like the 39 Steps, things that have been huge hits in the West End. For me, it doesn't have quite that magic, that consistent brilliance that the 39 Steps did. I loved that production, but it is brilliantly ingenious, and I think all credit should go to the creative team for doing it. It's a wonderful piece of theatre, and it was much appreciated by a good audience at the Arts Theatre last night. The play is on until Saturday. Performances every evening, obviously, and there are matinees on Saturday and on Thursday. Ticket prices start at 15, go up to 35, and the important number, you can book online at cambridgeartstheatre.com, but the important telephone number is Cambridge 503333.
But what Nicola missed in that wonderful review of Perfect Nonsense is, what's a cow creamer?
Well, Julian, I can tell you that a creamer is a small pitcher or jug designed for holding cream or milk to be served with tea or coffee in the Western tradition. Creamers in the shape of a cow with an opening or lid on its back for filling, known as cow creamers, originated in Holland but became very popular in England from about 1740. Incidentally, the Potteries Museum and Art Gallery has the Keeler collection of 667 ceramic cow creamers. What?
Oh, I must go shortly after I've been to the Harry Potter tour.
Oh my gosh, yes, you must.
Okay, what's next?
Elsewhere around Cambridge, the Footlights International Tour Show 2014, Real Feelings, has returned to the ADC Theatre for a home run. It's another chance to catch this year's most exciting Footlights show. I haven't seen the others yet, but you know, for the last time after their tour of London, Edinburgh and America. This is the chance to see last year's most talented writers and performers one last time as they bring freshly honed, sharp, hilarious sketches to the ADC stage. So that's Ryan Amar, James Blore, Tom Fraser, Alex McKeith and Ben Pope performing some of the best comedic talent over the past year. So you can catch it at the ADC for their final home run until Saturday the 11th of October at 11 p.m. It's a late show. It runs for about an hour and a half, and tickets are £7 and £6. Age suitability is 16 plus, and it's a great laugh, as you may remember from my previous review.
I do.
Yes, it was great. So,
we're done.
Elsewhere around Cambridge as well. we've got Tim Spooner's Assembly of Animals coming to Cambridge Junction this Sunday. Puppetry, magic and science combining this new installation / performance for young audiences and families.
We say young, what sort of age?
It's suitable for ages 3 plus.
Okay.
But definitely a family outing. On a slowly expanding stage, mysterious visions of unusual objects, light up liquids and magnetic animals emerge from the darkness and reveal their mechanics. Tim Spooner's new piece will allow audiences to experience an intriguing spectacle and the inner workings of its delicately composed elements. I've seen some of the designs and some of the pictures for this, and they are beautiful. It's going to be a really intriguing show. Definitely, if you've got kids who are interested in sort of, you know, mechanics, maybe they like D&T, I don't know if it's still called D&T at school, design and technology, woodwork, that kind of stuff, then this could be just the ticket for you. So you can catch it Sunday the 12th of October, so that's this Sunday at Cambridge Junction in J3. You can catch it at 11:30 a.m, 2:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Prices are £10 for adults and £6 for children, but for £27, a group of four can grab a family ticket. That's a maximum of two adults. So tickets from junction.co.uk or by phoning the box office on 01223 511 511. There's still tickets for the 2:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. shows, so you can probably just turn up on the door, but might be worth ringing ahead just to check availability.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are you back next week with Sky or solo?
Probably solo. No, I will be here with him next week.
Okay.
I'm sure of that.
Checking your diary.
Yep.
A couple of bits of news for you with regard to the Ebola virus. First of all, the French media is reporting that 60 people have been quarantined north of Paris after four people showed symptoms of the Ebola virus. So 60 people quarantined north of Paris. And the Macedonian Foreign Ministry is saying that the Briton died in hospital in Skopje and tests being carried out to determine whether the individual had Ebola virus, which is a little bit less certain than what we heard previously on that. Foreign Office is investigating the claims, and Victoria will bring us all the details at 7.